All right, we are recording. Are you ready?
Yeah, all good.
All right, here we go. Thank you so much for joining me today on Range of Change, Travis. I'm very excited to share your story of expatriation and immigration to New Zealand with my listeners. You made this move from the United States to New Zealand a while ago, but I think that people are going to want to hear all about it and what a success story it's been. So let's start at the beginning. I think so many of us dream of doing exactly what you did, of living abroad for some portion of our lives. How did you come to consider doing this?
So I guess how my wife and I first came kind of across this as an option. We were actually in Korea, the last part of my stint in the Army. And got a taste of living internationally. We were there for about 2 years living in Seoul, and actually met some folks from New Zealand there and kind of became good friends with them. And they were the ones that kind of put the idea of New Zealand in our head. And at the time, got out of the Army, and at the time we didn't really qualify for the way the immigration scheme was, or residency, but just kept it in the back of our mind, and kind of kept an eye on where the thresholds are to get across the point system that they had at that time for residency. And it was about a year and a half after Korea, it kind of dropped down enough where we could actually apply for residency, and just kind of jumped in both feet.
That's amazing. And I'm really curious, what was that like exact moment like, where it had been in the back of your mind for a year and a half, you kept an eye on it, and then all of a sudden it was like go time?
Kind of the backtrack. So the way the residency worked back then, it was all sort of a point system to get get your application past a certain point. And that had to do with how many people were applying at that time, which in immigration then was very different. There probably wasn't anywhere near the interest in it as there is now. Mm-hmm. And I had a qualification that was identified as one that was on the skill shortage list. And that's kind of what got us all across the line. Back then, you could actually get residency before you even moved to the country and even had a job offer, which is completely unheard of nowadays. But yeah, the rules were a little bit different then. So we took advantage, and when it opened up, we just took advantage of the opportunity that was there. And if we hadn't done it then, it probably within a year after that, it wouldn't have been an option, just the way the thresholds moved with the point system they had at that time.
Wow, that's really lucky. And no hesitancy, no second thoughts, no cold feet. You guys just went for it.
Yeah, pretty much. Some of our family and friends thought we were a little crazy for doing it. We had never actually been to New Zealand before doing this. So it was very much get on a plane to the unknown and just made it work.
Wow. And did you have housing or a job lined up?
No, nothing of that sort. We had a little bit of savings saved up, and we had planned to initially come and just sort of kind of bum around, for lack of a better term, and just kind of explore and just spend 6 months or so just kind of traveling around and doing different things and kind of figure out what we wanted to do and where we wanted to be. Plans changed rapidly once we got here. That same friend I had in Korea, we kind of linked up with them, and he had a contact through his wife that worked in the kind of the hospital setting. My wife had previously worked as an EMT on ambulances in the U.S. and had looked into being a nurse in the U.S., but going back to school was a little more complicated than she was wanting to get involved in. And this friend in New Zealand was like, oh, you should have a look at this university. They have plenty of nursing openings in their nursing program. And that's kind of within like an afternoon of sitting down with the people at their office, we were signed up for a 3-year bachelor's of nursing degree about a month after arriving.
Wow, how fortuitous. I love it. I'm not a real woo-woo person, but I definitely do love that there seems to be a lot of synergy when people are following their instincts and doing the things that they're really called to do, that things tend to just work out nicely. And it sounds like it worked out that way for your wife.
Yeah, and it was kind of we had a couple of different options. I actually was applying for a few jobs in my based on my degree, and I actually had a job offer on the table at the same time this nursing thing happened. So it was sort of which lane are we going to choose? But we chose the have her go back to school. And so I obviously dictated where we lived after that, because I had to go live where the university was at. And yeah, kind of just things progressed from there.
Oh, how interesting. that you went there without a job opportunity, and then you really had two big options that took you in one of two directions.
Yep. Yeah, and very much so now. I mean, it's very, even if you're a medical doctor, you can't move to New Zealand without a job offer. It's completely unheard of now. So it was a very unique situation how the system worked at that time. So that's since changed.
Yeah. But still, kudos to you guys for just jumping in with both feet, like you said, and making the most of that opportunity. So you left the U.S. with very little. I'm curious, this is just like a super tactical thing, but having carried a bag or two a piece, I imagine, when you got to New Zealand, were there things that you realized like, oh man, I miss this from back home, or I'm so glad I remembered to grab this one item? Are there sort of artifacts of your old life that you brought with you, or ones that you missed when you didn't?
Not really. We were already sort of, I wouldn't say we were intentionally pursuing sort of the minimalist lifestyle. It probably wasn't even a term at that time, but it kind of just fell, it kind of was the path and kind of what we fell into, just in how we viewed sort of possessions and that sort of thing. And kind of stayed in that same trend since then. We don't acquire a lot, so it opens up opportunities for you. It's easier to move around and take advantage of different things as they present themselves if you're not tied down to a bunch of stuff you have to move at the same time.
Yeah, very practical. All right, so I'm also curious, you said that you moved sight unseen. So what were your perceptions when you got there? Did it live up to what you had been imagining and hearing from your friends?
Yeah, I mean, we had done a lot of research. I mean, we'd kind of thought about this and had waited for a number of years, just waiting for the opportunity. So it was a lot of internet research, but I mean, this was 15, 16 years ago. So it was a little bit different. What you could actually find on the internet regarding it wasn't quite the same as today. But yeah, it was pretty much just a kind of jump into it with both feet. And what I mean, you don't know 100% what you're getting into until you experience it. And I guess that was one of our, we had traveled quite a bit in the past. So we knew, like, even if we had visited, if you're a visitor to a place, you don't really get the same perspective as you do when you actually live in that place. You might see some of the cursory things and get an idea of how things are, but until you actually live there for a duration, you don't really get a feel for it, I think. But yeah, once we got here, it definitely lived up to a lot of the expectations we had and what we were looking for in the lifestyle here.
Nice. And I apologize, I should have looked at this before I talked to you. Had those Lord of the Rings movies come out yet?
Yes, we moved over. Yeah, so we did all the residency application and all that. It would have been 2008. And then I think we got the stamps, like the actual visa. I think it was like right around the new year. But then we didn't actually move. I think at that time you could move within 12 months after getting approved. So we did a few things back just to kind of the last hurrah before we got on the plane. And then actually moved in September of 2009. So the movies had been out. I think those were 8-9 years prior to that, or at least the one. So I think when the first one came out, but yeah, there was still a big draw to the tourist crowds that come through and a big deal down here.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, like, that's the image you have in your head. Before that movie, I didn't have an image in my head of New Zealand.
And kind of a coincidence, kind of a sidebar to that is they actually filled further later on down the track, they filled The Hobbit down here. And we came very close to becoming extras in that, but we were actually a bit over the height limit they were looking for. So,
oh no! Oh, how funny! That's so cool. How did you even like learn about that? Was that a sort of a big deal when it was happening?
Well, at the time, the main workshops and film studios that did that were based in Wellington, and we lived just north of there, about 45 minutes. So it was kind of, they were doing some of the filming in our area, so they were. It was pretty common here, but a lot of people actually were extras in a lot of that stuff. So it's kind of a running joke if you were an extra in one of the Lord of the Rings movies.
That's fun. So is it difficult given, I imagine it's difficult if someone relocates to any country, but given the immense time difference, is it hard to keep in touch with friends and family back in the States?
It is to a degree. Like having live conversations can be a bit tricky just because it is pretty much like right now, I think it's what, 10 10 p.m. on the East Coast of the United States, and it's about 4 p.m. in the afternoon here. So it's easier to time on weekends, and then use different applications like Voxer and those sorts of things where you can lead messages back and forth without actually having to be live with each other. So there's lots of things you can do to kind of keep those connections alive. It's even more so than it was when we first moved here. There's quite a few different things that you can do nowadays that we didn't have back in when we first moved here.
Mm. Yeah, that makes sense. And how frequently do people come to visit you, or do you come back to the States? It's such a long flight.
We don't go back that way very much, but people, our family comes here quite often, almost a yearly thing now. So, and it's usually an extended yearly thing. I think the first time my parents came here, it was only a few weeks, but then the second time was almost 3.5 months. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. So that they've been, I think they've been here 5 times, and my brother's been down before. So yeah, it's kind of a tourist destination. So they take advantage of somebody to shack up with when they get here.
Yeah, they settle in 3.5 months. That's a whole different, I mean, I guess it puts it in perspective, because I had wondered, like, oh, if you don't get to keep in touch, and maybe not the frequent touch points that you have with someone who lives a state away, but you're spending like really good quality time with someone if they come to visit for 3 months.
Yeah, and we've had friends come pass through and kind of use this as a base to kind of explore, and a base camp to sort of explore and branch out from. So we've done that for a few people that have come down here.
Nice. All right. So you relocate to New Zealand, and that opens up opportunities, I imagine, to spend time in Australia or to do other traveling. Did you set down roots in New Zealand and never move again, or did you continue to wander a bit?
So we've traveled. Well, we've done a few different things. I'll back up a step. So yeah, one, New Zealand's a very good base to kind of explore parts of the world that aren't necessarily really accessible from, say, Western Europe or United States. So it's very accessible to get to a lot of South Pacific locations, small South Pacific islands that are like Fiji, Samoa, Tonga, the Cook Islands, Niue, all sorts of different places that are just a 2.5-3 hour direct flight from here. So that's one thing you have going for you here. And then once you become New Zealand citizens, you have to be a resident for 5 years, and you can apply for citizenship, which is a very basic process and easy to do. But there's an arrangement between Australia and New Zealand where the citizens in each country can live and work in each other's country freely. So you can basically apply for any job and just get on a plane and go to Australia, and just like any Australian would. So it's sort of similar to moving between states. You don't have to apply for visas or anything like that. So we've done that twice. We've been over to Australia on 2 short-term contracts. I think they were about 6 months each. And yes, kind of experienced that a couple different places in Australia just to do it. We're kind of between work. And also have gone to Africa a few times, working for a humanitarian organization the last 6 years. We've been back there 3 times.
Oh, wow. So
the first 2 times were about 3 to 4 months. And then last year we were there quite long, a bit longer stint, so for a good chunk of 2024. So we only got back to New Zealand in the last few months and kind of got settled back into life here.
Oh my goodness, you guys are so adventurous.
Yeah, it's we actually found out about that opportunity kind of randomly just watching TV on a National Geographic program. They had a documentary on that organization and the work they were doing, and that kind of spurred our interest. So we just put in an application and kind of snowballed from there.
I love it. I mean, there are so many people that say, oh, I'm going to do volunteer work, or, you know, I'm going to join the Peace Corps. And most people don't do it. So I'm curious, you know, if you think that it's inherent traits that you guys have, if it's something in your past, like what do you think gives you the fortitude to say, I want to do this and I'm going for it?
Well, I think it's a little, some of it's internal, kind of based on your character, but I think a lot of it can be learned as well. I think that first experience we had in Korea, I mean, that was very much a kind of throw us into the deep end to a country where you don't speak the language, no one don't understand what anybody's saying, and just kind of wing it and figure out how to operate in such a country. And I think since then it kind of sets you up to to do those sorts of experiences and not have it be such a stressor on you, I guess, is the best way of putting it. So it's not such a scary thing to jump into something you're not 100% familiar with. As long as you kind of know the general outlines of how things might work and you don't really worry about all the details, you kind of figure those out along the way.
Yeah, it's a really good piece of advice because I think, you know, when a lot of us are scared, we tend to prep and plan and, you know, try to find safety in the idea that we can account for every circumstance. But you're saying almost the opposite is true. You can't account for everything. You'll make yourself crazy. Sometimes you just have to take a little bit of a leap of faith.
Yeah, I think if you focus on like the big pieces and not worry about a lot of the kind of the periphery details is a good strategy with that. But if you have a plan, everything planned out exactly how it's going to work when you get kind of get into a, say like moving to another country, you have every single little detail, highly likely a lot of those details aren't going to work when you actually get there and try to actually set yourself up. So that's just even more stress when things are going against the plan you had and things are failing. But if you kind of just have a general idea of the direction you want to go when you get there and kind of go with the flow, for lack of a better term, I think that's a good way to do it.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned to me and the last time that we chatted that you were actually on one of these humanitarian trips when the COVID pandemic came to fruition. And I'm curious what that was like, because that's one of those big things that you just can't account for. What was it like to find yourself overseas? I mean, were you connected to the news at that time? Did you even know this was happening?
Yeah, so we had good connectivity, had internet and all that sort of thing. But it was like, if everybody remembers back to that time, it was still very kind of weird. No one knew it was happening up until it got really serious really quick. And we were there, I think we got there in late November of 2019. And we were there right up till it started getting really weird for international travel. So our scheduled flights were at our departure dates were actually kind of the same time. I think they were in March, but we bumped them up a little bit. And we left the last week of February, and within like 3 weeks, everything got really, really weird. So we passed through Doha on the way back, and it was just a ghost town. I mean, by then, international travel had started to get kind of problematic. And if we had been about a week, 10 days later, it probably would have been really problematic. And then it was 3 weeks after we left that they had the full scale, like closed the borders to New Zealand and no one's leaving, no one's getting out sort of thing.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's wild. And New Zealand was one of the countries that I thought had a very logical framework with like the colors and you knew what they meant, but it was also way more restrictive than a lot of places. What was that like?
Well, it was restrictive in certain regards. So I think we went into like full like lockdown. They had some cases that got across the border, and this was like the third week of March, and like basically just shut down the country for 6 weeks. But at the end of that, there was zero cases. There was no border traffic. I mean, there was people like obviously shipping and those sorts of things, but there was quarantine at the border. So they basically completely eliminated COVID in the country while it existed everywhere else in the world, which was a bit surreal. So we came out of that roughly six week lockdown to relatively normal life. Like when you're looking at the news everywhere else in the world, and it's very, very different. And it was basically like that for 2 years. I mean, there was a few cases. So we didn't have any, I mean, they had some very small localized lockdowns that happened from cases kind of getting through the quarantine, but it wasn't like it got through widespread through the country, but it was pretty much life as normal the entire time COVID went on here, for lack of a better term, after that main lockdown.
Yeah. Was that like the most different that your life felt to friends and family back in the States, or has life been, you know, substantially different in New Zealand than what you see and hear about amongst your network?
Yeah, I mean, it was already very different up to that point, but at that point you could definitely tell things were very, very different just based on we were living normally and going to restaurants and just operating like, I mean, there was no tourists here, which is a big difference. So like in the summer period when there was supposed to be a lot of tourists running around, it was just us down here with everybody else that lived here. So it was a very different feel and how things felt in the country, but yeah, it was just normal life, really.
Wow. Crazy. All right. So are there things that you think that people misunderstand about the expatriate immigrant lifestyle?
Yeah, I think a lot of people think that, one is like you kind of, people look at it how immigrants are kind of operated in or operate and kind of viewed in the United States when it's very different in every country in the world. For example, I know there's a fairly sizable immigrant population in the United States, but in New Zealand, it's massive. I think it's 32% of everybody that's in this country right now is born somewhere else. So one in three of people are foreigners, essentially, or weren't born here. So that's a very multicultural dynamic, but I think it's quite unique. And the definition of what it means to be a Kiwi isn't necessarily being born here and having four generations or five generations of people that have lived here and established those roots. It's more the attitude you have about being part of this country and living here.
Nice. All right. So I know there's a lot of people that are, especially in America, that are super interested in this topic, super interested in New Zealand in particular. They feel unsafe or just unhappy with the direction of the country. Do you have advice for people that are just getting started in their journey and beginning to research places that are best for them and their family?
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of different opportunities out there. You just have to kind of look what's going on in different countries and the specific requirements for those. New Zealand, like a lot of other countries, it's based on skill. Immigration generally is based on skill shortages in the workforce. I mean, there's lots of niche pieces and different things, but generally it's a skilled migration sort of thing. So you have a qualification or a skill that's in demand, whether it be a medical doctor, a teacher, engineers, all sorts of different things. And those shortages change with time. And you're basically filling a gap in that particular workforce is how it basically works here. So there's lots of different opportunities, but yeah, there's lots of information on the New Zealand immigration website if you want to look into it further. But yeah, it's just a matter of matching up what your background is to the particular country you're trying to move to.
Now, I know you had friends when you moved there, but do you have any advice about, you know, imagining that you do land safely and you get to be in a new country, how to sort of become part of the culture and meet people and, you know, just really get your footing in your new location?
I think most of it just, well, a lot of it's probably dependent on the country you're actually going to. I mean, the experience you have here is going to be radically different than somewhere like, I don't know, South Korea, where we lived before. I mean, it's just a very different dynamic where you're going to go, probably have to answer that question. At least for here, though, I mean, it's just people here don't really care that you're from another country as long as you want to be here and be a Kiwi, essentially. So that's what you do. You just start doing what everybody else is doing around you, and you gradually build those networks and start fitting into kind of the social groups again here.
Great. Well, this has been a really fun conversation. Are there any other aspects of, you know, this change that took place for you then, or even as your life has evolved to now, that you want to share before we sign off for the night or afternoon in your case?
Yeah, overall, it's been a pretty good, interesting ride the whole time. I think the biggest thing is just kind of being open to opportunities as they present themselves and just see where they take them. I mean, that's kind of been our attitude since we jumped into this and a long time ago, and then all the different things we've done since then is just be open to the stuff that comes across your path and we figure it out as you go along the way.
I love it. Thank you so much for sharing this really incredible story of seizing opportunities and really flourishing in your new life. It's been great talking with you, Travis.